Depression, the Way Out by Dr. Neil Nedley. What causes depression? During her first visit to my office, Tanya told me that she was tired of being tired. She'd gone through this routine too many times. When she didn't feel well, she usually delayed calling a doctor, hoping that the problem would take care of themselves. But when some symptoms eventually demanded her attention, she reluctantly made an appointment to find a doctor who could take her immediately. She'd seen several doctors for these symptoms in the last 2 years, but her delays frequently made it necessary to take whatever emergency appointments were available. In most cases, the routines had been familiar, and the visit would end with the doctor handing her a prescription. She told me that she was just too busy to do all of those complicated things like thinking about changes in diet, getting more exercise, and taking a vacation once in a while. The medication is easier. Today, when doctors make a diagnosis of depression, it is almost automatic for them to prescribe a medication. This is a typical practice and may help to treat the depression. It may also decrease the risk of suicide, but it may not be the ticket to depression-free living. Simply put, medication may treat the symptoms of depression, but miss the underlying cause. On Tanya's first visit to the office, she was clearly in abdominal pain. She bent forward, guarding the middle of her body with both arms. As a new patient, Tanya was still learning about my medical philosophy. She clearly expected to be given something for the pain before being poked and prodded. Medical school stresses the importance of never giving someone pain medication for abdominal pain, no matter how severe, until a thorough exam is performed. Why? Medication can mask the pain and make it much more difficult for a physician to pinpoint the cause. There are a number of different causes of this common malady. The same is true with depression. Antidepressant medications for the pain can help relieve symptoms, but may make it more difficult for a health professional to determine the cause of the depression. If the cause of the abdominal pain or the depression is not found, the pain will often continue, recur, or become more severe. Also, pain is not always connected to what may seem the most obvious. So we begin with the process of questioning for understanding. Eventually, I discovered that Tanya's pain was not directly connected with the part of her body she cautiously guarded. By definition, major depression includes a combination of symptoms, but the diagnosis of symptoms does not pinpoint the cause of the disease. To find a long-term solution, it is imperative to identify the causes of depression and to treat each one systematically. Unfortunately, as Tanya observed, this is not usually as simple a process as prescribing a drug. Like most chronic diseases, depression is a complex disease with many factions interacting to produce depression. The most effective treatments broadly attack each identifiable cause. There are 8 major factors that can either cause or contribute to depression. These factors are categories, which provides the framework that we will use to explore the intricacies of depression and its treatment. Unchangeable risk factors for depression. Clearly, there are some risk factors for depression that cannot be changed. Sometimes, simply becoming aware of these can fuel depression. After all, it can be discouraging to think that the deck may be stacked against you, making perpetual bouts of depression seemingly unavoidable. When I called Tanya's unchangeable risk factors to her attention, she understood that my reason for highlighting them was not to discourage her. Instead, this information gave her encouragement to fight the pain and depression by focusing her energy on factors that she could change. The truth about Tanya's case is encouraging. No one is doomed to perpetual depression. By addressing factors that can be changed, even the person with the worst set of non-changeable risk factors can often beat the odds altogether and stave off depression or greatly decrease its severity. Let's look carefully at the risk factors. The more of these factors present in our lives, the more thought we should give to preventative strategies before this common mood disorder strikes. But let me add an important footnote. If you seem to have escaped all of the familiar, unchangeable factors, keep 2 things in mind. First, you may have inherited tendencies to depression that has never been noted in any immediate family members. Secondly, depression can strike anyone, including those who have none of the unchangeable factors. The fact is sometimes overlooked that knowing your non-modifiable factors can provide an early warning and help prevent the disease. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Tanya found a more permanent solution to many of her symptoms and now believes that it is healthier to choose a lifestyle that decreases the risk of depression and its complications than to temporarily medicate them. Genetics. It is important to emphasize that inherited tendencies, called genetics, can set the stage for depression, but inherited roots alone are not always sufficient to cause depression. People who have inherited depressive tendencies may avoid the condition by giving attention to other risk factors. One of the applications of genetics is to identify specific genes associated with any given condition. Unfortunately, there does not appear to be a single gene that is responsible for a depressive tendency. It is more likely that multiple genes play various roles in setting the stage for depression, with lifestyle and other factors being the final players. In a broad sense, genetics accounts for our gender, and it's related to our ethnic roots. Nonetheless, despite the relation between genes and these so-called demographic factors, when it comes to gender and race, significant social factors are also involved. Let us look at these factors along with age in the following section. Depression among our youth. Depression is not an adults-only disease. A summary of depression among our youth is that up to 20% of adolescents and adults have depression, 14% of youth have attempted suicide by age 15, 47% of 17 to 18-year-old women in L.A. had major depression in a 5-year span, Hispanic and Black adolescents report more depression than white adolescents, 2 to 3 times more women are depressed than men, and depressed adolescents have a 60% chance of recurrence as adults. The facts cited are astonishing. The message is clear. We must get the word out that the youth of this country are at high risk of becoming depressed, and the consequences of their depression are very serious. We see that rates in adolescents reach as high as 20%, indicating that young adults suffer from this disorder nearly as frequently as do older adults. Adolescents who are depressed are particularly vulnerable to what is probably depression's most tragic outcome, suicide. Attempted suicide rates peak during the adolescent years. By age 15, an overwhelming 14% of youth report having attempted suicide. Teen and young adult women are at higher risk for depression than men, although not necessarily typical of the entire U.S. population. Recent data from Los Angeles is extremely disturbing. Researchers studied 155 young women aged 17 and 18 for 5 consecutive years. Almost 50% of these women had at least one episode of major depression in that relatively short time span. Academic difficulties or romantic problems appear to increase the risk of depression in members of this high-risk age group. In the previously cited study by Emisil and colleagues, students of African Americans and Hispanic ethnicity reported significantly more depression than did white students. This stands in sharp contrast to statistics for older adults where there does not seem to be any racial influence for depression. Gender is another consideration. Even into adulthood, women are at greater risk of depression than men. It has been noted that between 2 to 3 times as many women have major depression compared to men. International surveys suggest that in the larger number of these females, depression is not due to cultural factors only. While gender and culture do not explain all the statistics, the numbers clearly establish the fact that in many nations, with few exceptions, women suffer from depression more frequently than do men. A history of depression in adolescence. No matter how unpleasant our past physical and mental health struggles may have been, no one can rewrite personal medical history. If you have experienced depression as an adolescent, you have an increased risk for major depression in your adult years. Weissman and colleagues from Columbia University forcibly illustrated this fact in a study. Among the people they studied, nearly 2/3 of those who experienced depression as adolescents were also depressed in their adult years. Family history of depressive disorders. There is broad consensus that risk of depression is substantially increased when there is a family history of depressive disorder, particularly if it exists in first-degree relatives, such as siblings or parents. Family history of depression, if present, should clearly raise red flags. Mental illness can pass from parent to child. A study showed that children whose parents suffered from major depression were 9 times more likely to be depressed than children from unaffected families. I strongly urge these individuals to take seriously the possibility of experiencing depression. If you do not take depression seriously, statistics warn that you may be the next victim. The strategy should be to seriously address risk factors that you can do something about. Among the controllable factors to be considered are what you eat. Nutrition. Diet has such a profound effect on human metabolism that it comes as no surprise that there are many interrelationships between the foods we eat and our risk of depression. However, because we all have different genetic backgrounds and live in different environments, our susceptibility to nutritional causes of depression varies widely from one individual to another. Consequently, some of the areas that I have categorized as diet-related may require a certain genetic background or other factors to be in place for depression to result. This consideration does not minimize the importance of these factors or their nutritional relationships. Instead, since underlying genetic or metabolic susceptibilities of an individual are often not known, it behooves us to choose the most widely nutritious diet as possible. Inadequate serotonin and depression. Low serotonin levels in the brain are a contributing factor to depression. Furthermore, serotonin is produced in large amounts in the region of the frontal lobe, called the prefrontal cortex, than in any other portion of the brain. And as might be expected, if the frontal lobe is depressed, serotonin levels will also be lower. A high level of serotonin in the brain is an important factor in treating depression, but serotonin is not found in any food or food supplements. It can only be manufactured within the body. The body needs certain raw materials to make serotonin. One of these materials is the amino acid or protein building block known as tryptophan. Eating foods with adequate amounts of tryptophan optimizes serotonin production. One study considered 15 women who had a past history of depression, but were recovered and currently mentally healthy and happy without drug treatment. These women were put on a diet low in tryptophan. The diet produced a 75% reduction in plasma tryptophan concentrations. 10 of the 15 women experienced temporary but clinically significant depressive symptoms. Some of the women claimed they experienced a full relapse. Researchers noted that one woman experienced a sudden onset of sadness, despair, and uncontrollable crying. This study was highly praised as the first to show a direct link between diet and mood. One of my female patients has noticed that going just one day on a low tryptophan diet will cause a relapse into depression and anorexia, having no desire to eat, which is a prominent symptom for her when she is depressed. Chapter 4 explains how to get enough tryptophan in the diet. Omega-3 fats and the brain. Fish oil has been strongly publicized as being healthful. It contains an important fat, found abundantly in the fatty tissues of cold water fish. It is the omega-3 variety, a designation used to refer to its particular chemical structure. Omega-3 fats have many beneficial effects, ranging from heart disease prevention to anti-inflammatory properties. They deserve our attention in this chapter because of their profound mental health implications. The serious effects on the brain of a diet deficient in omega-3 fatty acids are increased risk of depression, a link to increased aggression in prisoners, and a lower IQ by 9 to 10 points in infants by the time they reach adulthood. Omega-3 fatty acids are a very important nutrient in reducing risk of depression. The relationship to IQ deserves some comment. Some thought-provoking studies have focused on infant brain development. It is clear that omega-3 fats are necessary for optimal brain development during the critical formative time of early life. Unfortunately, cow's milk and traditional baby formulas are both low in omega fatty acids. Human breast milk, on the other hand, contains a much higher amount. Even as late as 2001, these important omega-3 fatty acids had not yet found their way into infant formula. These relationships are not merely theoretical. Researchers have discovered that the brain effects of omega-3 deficiency last a lifetime. Today's adults who are given infant formulas and cow's milk have, on average, a 9 to 10 point lower IQ than those who are receiving human breast milk. This finding raises an additional question. Might individuals who are not given breast milk experience an increased risk of depression, even if they currently consume an adequate amount of omega-3? Since a lack of breast milk results in learning handicap, might it also handicap the resistance to depression? If researchers find that growth of the frontal lobe is impaired by omega-3 deficiency, then we may rightly expect an increased risk of depression in those who were not fed breast milk in their infancy. How do we protect ourselves from a diet low in omega-3? Fish are not the only source. In fact, fish should be avoided because of their negative effects on health. These effects include late contamination with heavy metals and other contaminants. The dangers of heavy metal contamination are explained later in the chapter. Other negative effects of fish are spelled out in Chapter 4. Many plant foods are rich in omega-3. A long list of these foods is also found in Chapter 4. Folic acid and mental health. Depression can be caused or worsened by insufficient blood levels of a B vitamin called folic acid, also referred to as folate. It has received a lot of media attention lately. This attention is a response to the fact that if folic acid is not consumed in high enough amounts by pregnant mothers, the unborn can have a heart disease, stroke, and brain or spinal cord defect. Drugs that will fail to relieve depression caused by deficient folic acid are Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, Elavil, and imipramine, or potentially any other currently available antidepressant. We learned that the correct treatment of any disease depends on proper diagnosis of the cause or causes. When a person does not respond well to antidepressant medication, a blood test for folate content may reveal why there has been no improvement. Raising the folic acid level by diet, as outlined in Chapter 4, would typically cure this form of depression. It has been found that a low blood folate level not only increases the risk of depression, but also increases the risk of Alzheimer's disease. Vitamin B12 and depression. Vitamin B12 is vital to optimal health of the nervous system. Symptoms of a deficiency of this vitamin are poor coordination, frequent forgetfulness, and depression. It can even affect the personality. Many patients with B12 deficiency have been mistakenly diagnosed as having Alzheimer's disease. This essential vitamin is found most reliably in animal products and fortified plant foods. However, even a diet that is adequate in B12 does not ensure adequate blood levels of this vitamin. Vitamin B12 has one of the most complicated absorption processes of any nutrient. It requires appropriate interaction in the mouth and stomach before it is successfully absorbed in the small intestine. As we age, it is common to lose some of the stomach's absorptive capacities. Consequently, by the time we reach 80, if we rely on food alone to give us our B12, we have about 1 in 5 chance of developing serious problems and deficiencies. Taking B12 supplements is advised, and they should be chewed rather than swallowed whole. Although it is more difficult to find, I recommend chewed hydroxycobalamin as the best B12 supplement since it lacks the cyanide molecule and actually detoxifies the system by becoming a cyanide scavenger. Although many associate B12 deficiency with a vegan or vegetarian diet, only a small percentage of people with B12 deficiency are vegetarian. Homocysteine and depression. Homocysteine is an amino acid or protein building block. Elevated levels of this compound have been convincingly linked to stroke, heart attack, and other problems related to blood vessel blockage. Individuals with higher homocysteine levels also appear to have an increased risk of depression. However, it is very difficult to tell whether homocysteine itself is doing the damage. This perplexity arises from the fact that many of the known causes of high homocysteine levels are also causes of depression. As we've seen, deficient levels of B vitamins, including B6, folic acid, and B12, can cause depression, and lower blood levels of these vitamins also tends to elevate concentrations of homocysteine. This raises the question, is homocysteine a problem when it comes to depression, or are higher levels of homocysteine simply an indication of the presence of other depression risk factors? To make the issue even more complex, as we will explore later, strokes, even unrecognized ones, can lead to depression. Since higher homocysteine levels appear to cause strokes, we have a similar question to that involving the B vitamins. Does homocysteine alone cause depression, or do the small strokes it causes do the dirty work? Thus, the link between low homocysteine and depression may not be a simple cause and effect relationship. Protein intake and early puberty. Among females, the risk of depression later in life is related to early puberty. Girls who are at the middle of their puberty phase of development by age 11 or younger have an increased risk of depression. The risk of developing depression symptoms in their teenage years and into adulthood is twice as great. The timing of puberty is no longer a perfect mystery. We now understand many factors that influence the age at which a girl begins her reproductive years. A lower amount of animal protein in the diet, especially before adolescence, seems to promote later puberty. A recent study suggests that the problem is indeed the high amount of animal protein in the U.S. diet. Dietary patterns of 67 white females in the United States were examined. The study found that the higher the animal protein intake at ages 3 to 5, the earlier the first menstrual period. In contrast, girls that consumed higher amounts of vegetable protein at ages 3 to 5 had a much later onset of menstruation. The adolescent growth spurt occurred earlier in girls who had higher fat intakes between the ages of 1 and 2, and the higher animal protein intakes between the ages of 6 and 8. Of course, early age menstruation carries with it other physical and social risks. It opens the door for higher levels of teen pregnancy and significantly increases breast cancer risk. The risk of developing panic or eating disorders in these girls is also increased. These significant facts should encourage people in the Western Hemisphere to rethink their love affair with foods high in animal protein. This, plus a great amount of other evidence, confirms that the average American consumes too much protein contained in meat and dairy products. There is some conjecture based on solid scientific evidence as to why a high-protein diet could cause depressed symptoms even in adults. As mentioned, tryptophan is needed in the diet to make serotonin, which in turn can help prevent or even treat depression. Tyrosine, valine, isoleucine, leucine, phenylalanine, and also large neural amino acids compete with tryptophan in traveling from the arteries into the brain tissue. These are amino acids that are abundantly found in animal protein. Researchers from the University of Milan in Italy measured and considered the ratio of tryptophan to these five amino acids in the bloodstream. They found that the lower the ratio, the greater the risk for depression or other mental illness. In the future, we may have to consider a food's ratio to these amino acids to determine the effects the food may have on our moods. A figure in Chapter 4 shows the ratio of these amino acids in a variety of foods. In addition to promoting early puberty, higher protein intake can have other indirect effects on depression. A high-protein diet with no other complicating factors increases the risk of breast cancer even if puberty is delayed. Other chronic diseases, such as prostate cancer, kidney stones, and osteoporosis, are also linked with increased consumption of animal protein. These and other chronic physical illnesses actually increase the risk of experiencing depression. Keeping in good physical health actually decreases the risk of depression, and in the long run, avoiding high-protein eating habits may tip the scales against depression and in favor of a number of health dividends. Other nutrients help to protect against depression. It is important to eat a balanced diet that includes enough of all of the basic vitamins and minerals, not just the nutrients mentioned above. For instance, one study found a substantial percentage of depressed patients' diets contain less than the RDA, recommended daily allowance, of one or more nutrients. A point worth considering is that many depressed patients do not feel hungry. This can lead to an inadequate food intake, which may also lead to a deficient diet and a worsening of depression. Toxins damage the brain. In an apparently ever more polluted world, toxins are often implicated as causes of chronic behavior changes and mental illness. Human contact with metals has coexisted with the development of civilization. The toxic effects of metals has been chronicled for centuries. Exposure to metals is not confined to industrial sites, since metallic substances have been known to contaminate water and enter the food chain. Some of the metals and toxins that have been associated with mental illness are lead, mercury, manganese, arsenic, bismuth, organotin, and trimethylene chloride. The hazards of lead poisoning have been found in several environments, such as dust, dirt, drinking water, calcium supplements, lead-based paint, and manufacturing environments. Lead. Lead poisoning captured the world's headlines in October of 2000, when the famous composer Ludwig van Beethoven's hair analysis was reported. He had such high concentrations of lead in his hair that he was thought to have suffered, possibly losing his hearing, and died from lead poisoning. Lead was one of the earliest nerve and brain toxins researched. Currently, it is used mainly in a few industries such as battery manufacturing, and the populations at risk are mainly exposed workers. It is no longer used in the production of paint, gasoline, plumbing components, or other products. Exposure among workers in some industries continues to be high, and the risk of toxicity remains significant. With cases of severe poisoning becoming less common, attention has shifted to more subtle forms of toxic exposure to lead. A number of studies found that exposure to lead can result in many disorders. Some of them are increased rates of depression, apathy, irritability, fatigue, confusion, diminished ability to control anger, and impairment of brain ability and behavior. In those who are daily exposed to lead, the blood lead levels is associated with how much fatigue is present on that particular day. Increased rates of depression, as well as confusion, fatigue, and anger, have been noted in those with blood lead levels greater than 40 milligrams per DL. Lead exposure in children has not been linked to depression, but has been linked to increased reaction time, antisocial behavior, and impairment of attention. Decreased intelligence and hearing loss can also occur in exposed children. Lead in paint was banned in 1975 in the United States, which has helped decrease the incidence of lead exposure in children. Exposure can also occur through dust, dirt, and drinking water, especially if the water passes through lead pipes. Another source of exposure is burning a candle with a metallic core in its wick, such as a scented or ceremonial candle. Dr. Jerome Nragu, professor of environmental health sciences at the University of Michigan, cautions that burning certain candles made in both China and the U.S. for 1 hour in an enclosed room can make airborne lead levels soar. The levels can reach 30 times higher than the level that has been determined unsafe by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. If the wick looks shiny, it could have lead or zinc in it and should not be burned in an enclosed environment. Herbs and vitamins from India and possibly other countries can be a source of very toxic lead levels. Another more common source is calcium supplements. Investigators from the University of Florida in Gainesville recently examined 22 brands of calcium supplements for lead and found that 8 had measurable levels of the toxic heavy metal, including a popular national brand, which had the highest content, Caltrate. Although none of the supplements had high levels that could produce nerve problems while taking the pill short term, the lead in the calcium supplements is still troubling because many people take the products every day for years. Children in low-income families are more likely to be exposed to lead, and in a study of 296 inner-city preschoolers 9 months to 3 years old, the researchers found that those with high levels of fat in their diet were more likely to have dangerous levels of lead in their blood. The children exposed to lead will actually absorb less lead if they eat less fat. Blood lead levels are useful for recent or chronic lead exposure, but are usually not helpful in determining past exposure. A child who is once described by the parents as a little angel, but later undergoes an aggressive personality change that may include bullying, vandalism, setting fires, and shoplifting, may have been exposed to lead. Unfortunately, an extensive X-ray capable of showing lead deposits in the bone is required to help determine the cause of the behavior change. At this time, only high blood lead levels can be treated by drug therapy, also known as chelation therapy, and the results of distant past exposure have no known treatment. These facts underscore the importance of avoiding lead exposure, especially in childhood. Lead exposure can not only affect and damage the brain, but it can also damage the kidneys and increase the risk of dental cavities. Mercury. Occupational mercury poisoning has been noted for centuries, the most prominent being the case of hat makers who used the closely guarded proprietary compound, mercury nitrate, to cure their felt. This historical fact is the source of the phrase Mad Hatters. There are potentially 4 neurological consequences of mercury toxicity: lack of coordination, inability to walk normally, impaired intelligence, and alterations in emotion and mood. The emotional symptoms include an increased sensitivity in interactions with others, irritability, avoidance behavior, depression, fatigue, and lethargy. A classic example is a person who becomes nervous, timid, and shy, blushes readily, and becomes embarrassed in social situations. He or she may object to being watched and seeks to avoid people, or may become irritable and quarrelsome. This behavior may result in the individual giving up his job. lethargy, tremors, lack of fine coordination, and at least some degree of impaired intelligence usually accompanies these symptoms. Where do we find mercury hazards? Imported herbs and vitamins, industrial exposure, certain beauty creams, certain vaccines, fish, and certain beef and other meats. Where do we find mercury hazards? Mercury poisoning does not always come from industrial exposure. It can also come from some herbs or vitamins produced in India and China. According to the Hong Kong Consumer Council, two variants of the Chinese herb watermelon frost were found to have toxic levels of mercury. A beauty cream manufactured in Mexico caused mercury poisoning in consumers and their family members in Texas and Arizona. The contaminated cream, called Creme de Belleza Manning, prompted a statewide health investigation in Arizona and highlights the hazards of purchasing certain products abroad. Of the 89 people who were found to have used the cream, many had early symptoms of mercury poisoning, including headaches, weakness, mood changes, and dizziness. Low levels of mercury are found in thermosal, a preservative used in some vaccines prior to 2001 in the United States. Mercury in fish. One of the most prevalent sources of mercury in the food chains is fish. In 1996, the Environmental Protection Agency stated that mercury intakes greater than 0.1 micrograms per kilogram of body weight are unsafe, although I believe any mercury in food is unsafe, particularly when eaten regularly. Fish, such as bass, crappie, dolphin, halibut, mackerel, pike, snapper, and tuna, contain 0.2 to 0.3 parts per million of mercury. An adult woman weighing 132 pounds would meet the safe threshold for mercury consumption by eating 4 ounces of such fish once a week. According to the EPA, any more than this amount of fish consumed would be unsafe. This underscores the importance of obtaining the omega-3 fats that help to prevent depression from plant sources instead of from fish. Chapter 4 explains how this can be done. A report from France on October 30, 2000 highlighted what was already known, that contaminated beef and other meats can also have toxic levels of mercury and other heavy metals. The French newspaper, the Daily La Parisienne, reported that cows consumed lead, mercury, cadmium, nickel, chromium, copper, and zinc as a result of a polluted canal that repeatedly overflowed, flooding the pasture in which the animals grazed. Instead of being born black and white, some of my calves came out from the womb reddish brown and white, the farmer who owned the herd was quoted saying. The newspaper said that of the 84 cows that lived in the pasture between 1998 and 2000, more than 40 died as a result of the contamination. Most of the others, some of which took on a rusty hue because of the amount of copper they consumed, were sold to slaughterhouses and became ground beef. Most dentists believe that the mercury amalgam fillings used to fill dental cavities do not pose a significant human risk. They're designed not to leak. Other orthomolecular scientists state that only composite non-mercury fillings or gold be used to fill dental cavities, since they believe that any risk is too high a risk. Mercury exposure in pregnant mothers can affect the unborn, increasing the likelihood of low birth weight and high blood pressure in their offspring. Recent toxic mercury exposure is treated with drug therapy, chelation therapy. If lethal amounts are absorbed through the skin or ingested orally, chelation therapy usually will not spare the life of the patient. Manganese. Unlike lead and mercury, manganese is a trace mineral that the body needs in small amounts for optimal health. In large amounts, manganese is toxic and is associated with impulsive, hyperactive behavior that is similar to the mania symptoms of bipolar disorder. Other possible symptoms include anorexia, weight loss, and insomnia. Typical major depression usually does not result from manganese toxicity. However, long-term occupational exposure to manganese or copper may result in Parkinson's disease. Manganese poisoning is largely an occupational disease and is much less common than lead or mercury poisoning. Arsenic. Arsenic has a long history of use for criminal purposes. Occupational poisoning currently occurs in the pharmaceutical and agricultural industries, in ore refinement, manufacture of glass, and in the fur industry. Mass poisonings have occurred when arsenic was accidentally mixed with foodstuffs, killing several people. Chronic arsenic intoxication causes several neurological effects, including weakness, lethargy, dizzy spells, fatigue, progressive anxiety, emotional instability, insomnia, depression, and in severe cases, a psychosis characterized by paranoid delusional thinking and progressive disturbance of judgment and self-care functions. Other symptoms include diarrhea and hot flashes. Chronic arsenic exposure can come from contaminated drinking water and may contribute to cancers of the skin, bladder, lung, and prostate. It has also been linked to anemia, diabetes, and heart disease. You can determine whether your drinking water has arsenic or other harmful substances by sending $12 to the Environmental Quality Institute at the University of North Carolina at Asheville. The Institute will send you the containers to send your sample back to them and issue a report to you of their findings. Filtration systems such as reverse osmosis, distillation, and anion exchange filters will remove arsenic. Bismuth. Bismuth, found in Pepto-Bismol, is used as a medication for indigestion, diarrhea, and to treat a stomach infection called Helicobacter pylori. Bismuth, if used chronically or in high amounts, can cause depression, anxiety, irritability, and tremors that may last from weeks to months. Sudden deterioration is known to occur without warning several years after exposure, with a development of symptoms reminiscent of stroke. A unique pattern of gray matter abnormalities can be seen on CT scans or MRIs. Organotin. Organotins are used in insect and rodent killers and disinfectants. A unique mood disorder has been reported in workers exposed to organotin, with alternating bouts of rage and deep depression lasting from several hours to days. These mood changes may be long-lasting, being noted on reevaluation between 9 and 34 months after exposure. It is not yet clear whether these changes are direct effects of organotin, the consequence of post-traumatic stress after the exposure, or a reflection of personality and coping styles. Trimethylene chloride. Chemical workers exposed to trimethylene chloride have reported symptoms of forgetfulness, fatigue, loss of motivation, periods of headache, and sleep disturbance. Trimethylene chloride. Chemical workers exposed to trimethylene chloride have reported symptoms of forgetfulness, fatigue, loss of motivation, periods of headache, and sleep disturbances. Toxins under suspicion but lacking evidence. Solvents comprise compounds largely used in industry and include carbon disulfide, toluene, perchloroethylene, and trichloroethylene. Although there have been case reports suggesting that some or all of the above chemicals may cause depression or other mental illness, there is a shortage of good research available stating the specific effects these chemicals actually have. The same is true of insecticide compounds such as organophosphates. You've been listening to Part 1 of Chapter 3 from the book Depression: The Way Out by Dr. Neil Nedley, copyright 2014. To purchase this or other books by Dr. Nedley, or to learn more about the 10-day residential Depression and Anxiety Recovery Program or the 8-week community programs, you're invited to visit www.nedleyhealthsolutions.com.